Sharon Maxwell, thank you for joining me. Okay. What is the nature of your participation here with the Vanport Mosaic Festival?
I was invited through via the social media, and I know some of the participants that have worked on this committee, Laura and Shalanda Sims and Renee Mitchell Phillips. So I wanted to come and just support this because it really helps people understand how the African American community and other communities actually came to the Oregon, I would say territory, as it is referred to in the information. And just being able to hear the story of Vanport, when people came, they came for employment. They also came to be able to get away from the Jim Crow South, where people, we were, as African Americans, were being discriminated, and we didn't have a way to make it for ourselves.
So Vanport was initially about the war effort, World War II effort, and the numbers of people who came to Vanport were really quite substantial, tens of thousands mm-hmm. of people. The nature of the work was building ships as quickly as possible, and it was dangerous and very intense work. And after the war, the attitude started to change towards the workers, is my understanding. And at the time of the flood, we have this phenomenon which seems to have been echoed by Katrina, in which first you have a wall of water and then you have a wall of racial aggression, which erases the town and its memory.
In sharing the story of Vanport and the history as it relates to specifically northeast Portland and how Vanport ended, as you could see in the movie about Vanport, how that they wanted people to go back to where they had come from. And some people did go back, but there were 6,000 African Americans that they cite that stayed. But they did not have any place, any home, any place for them to actually move to. And so they ended up having to stay in the Vanport area until finally they were able to get placed in the lower Columbia River, close to the river area, where Emmanuel Hospital and the freeway went in. And from that time, the families grew. And this became our community as African Americans, where people's lives began to take on stability, where we began to acquire wealth and be able to buy homes and go to school and become the community that we had become here in this city. And the story of Vanport really lays the foundation for that, where we were able to do that. And so with the whole thing today with talking about gentrification, the gentrification within itself, the history to that is that the war on drugs created the vehicle for gentrification and allowing the community and the neighborhood to be destroyed for residents, specifically African Americans, to actually come under attack and to be imprisoned and sent to jail, and also our properties taken away from us through fraudulent mortgage practices and banks that foreclosed on the properties. And while we're seeing this homeless issue even right now, it all stems from that, because the Housing Bureau and Home Forward, which was called HAP, they actually sold out I don't know the number, and they don't even talk about it, and you haven't even read about it, but the fact that they sold some of the rental units stock here in northeast Portland to developers, which turned them into condominiums and sold them, which those would have been a part of the rental stock to house the people who are low income to medium income. And so all of the story is not being told. This is a bigger picture, but I heard something in the story on Vanport was that this was the businessmen idea. It was their way of getting their hands on lots of money. And Henry J. Kaiser was about money. They were all about money and about how they could make money off the backs of the people who came here. And yes, people earned a good wage, but it was profits at a premium over people. And so to hear the story being told, I would like to hear people like myself actually being the ones telling the story, telling our story, not just dominant culture telling, always benefiting from the value of our story and leveraging our stories, the Native American story, the Hispanic story, the Japanese, you know. No, we want to own our resources. We want to own who we are. We want to be able to tell our own narrative of who we really are and benefit from that. And so I'm glad that the festival is going on. This is a start. This is the second festival, and we need it to continue to go on. But next year, I would like to see the festival partners parallel partnership with the Native Americans, the Japanese, and the African Americans to truly leverage our story and letting us tell our story so that we're actually able to communicate that and benefit from it, because there are, I'm sure, thousands of books. I'm actually writing 4 books to tell my story about my life here within Portland and the things that I've had to experience, because at the age of 19, I knew that my life would be different. And it was different, but not in the way that I thought. And so I'm going to tell that story. And so there are so many stories that will come from this where we can learn. And this is actually time. This is a good time that we're living in, but it's also a very scary time, because we need to address the issue of the discrimination and the hate toward mankind.
Thank you. And what you're saying is bringing up in my mind the details of the intersection of withdrawal of prosperity. That's a clumsy phrase. The restriction of economic gain, the restriction of wealth that comes along with the story of Vanport and subsequently. Could you tell me where redlining fits in that story?
Yes. So the redlining means that they actually drew a red line around this area, north, northeast Portland, and they only allowed the African-American community and probably the lowest of low-income white people and other ethnicities. We could only live in this area. They would not even allow us to even move out of this area. And so the reason why this is so impactful and hurtful to us is because we couldn't even go anywhere. Even if we wanted to move to Southwest Portland or Beaverton or Tigard, they had sundown laws that people who worked over there, they knew that they better get their butts home out by 5 o'clock. You better be leaving out of Beaverton. You better be getting out of Tigard. You better be out of Oregon City by sundown, or the police were like hot on your tail and they were profiling you and pulling you over. And so the fact that the redlining kept us here, that meant that we really got to know each other really well. Our families intermarried with each other. So he's really my cousin, she's really my aunt, because they married my uncle, he's my cousin through boo-boo over there. I mean, and so everybody was family. And so it's just redlining kept us to a certain area, and basically it allowed us to bond like a real community.
This also brings to mind the concurrent withdrawal of GI Bill funds from people of color. If I understand some of the confluence of aggression that's coming into the experience of black people in North Portland, Vanport is gone. Only the redlined areas are available, and the cash from the GI Bill, which everyone was enjoying at the time, has been withdrawn.
Yes, so my understanding of that was that veterans, African Americans, they were not giving those loans, those GI Bill loans, to African Americans. And I don't really know all of the story around that, but I knew that my parents, who both worked, and this was in the 70s, we were able to purchase our first home, my parents, for like $28,000. And it was because that they both worked, but that was like far and in between, you know. Not everybody who could have benefited from that GI Bill, because my dad was an Army veteran, and I don't remember if they actually got a loan based on that, but I don't think so. And so, but for the most part, they withheld back, just like they have, using our data all of these years, as we heard today, to get the money that should have went to the blighted neighborhoods. It went to the city in the name of the blighted neighborhoods, but we did not get to benefit from any of those dollars in a way that would have helped us to maintain the homes, maintain the area, and increase the value, as well as being able to grow and acquire wealth. And so they, meaning the city and the people who worked in those bureaus, were the ones who were benefiting from all of those resources that were coming into the city. And they were actually acquiring properties, building up other areas, and benefiting white people, but not the existing residents that really should have benefited, who owned homes, who owned property. We owned all of Mississippi, we owned all of Alberta, we owned all this area around here, all of this. And within, I would say, actually it started in the 80s. The war on drugs was the precursor to the whole gentrification, because they put in crack cocaine, which is chemical warfare, that basically strip people of their psychological ability to continue to function on a daily basis, to go to work, take care of business, and have their families. And not only that, the state put a mandate and authorized the DHS to take away our children under the guise of you are negligent in taking care of your children. Well, people needed help because they became addicted to crack cocaine. But there was no help, there was no rehabilitation, there was only prison. And so crack cocaine, the war on drugs, all a precursor to this whole gentrification and the destruction of a community and of a people. And now what they've done is moved us all out to Gresham, just thrown everybody to Gresham. And this was a coordinated effort. This was a coordinated effort, and as it's not being told, but that's part of the story as well. So Gresham and to the surrounding suburbia areas, that's where most of the black community and people who once lived, and you know, everybody who lived here, are being pushed to Vancouver, to the surrounding suburbs. Now they let us move out because they have no choice, because they want us to leave.
If I may, I would like to tie in again this thread that I'm seeing of economic devastation, the withdrawal of prosperity, through the drug war. In this case, that is not an effective wind filter. in this case, the drug war, using disproportionate surveillance, disproportionate arrest, disproportionate sentencing.
And manufacturing of false evidence.
It's that racial aggression expressed in that way has this tremendous economic effect, a devastation on the community. And so that comes on top of, once again, the other aspects that we were just describing since the war. Using that as a starting point, the destruction of Vanport, the removal of the GI Bill, the drug war, and now I'm curious as to the details, as to the, I am unfamiliar. Redlining is one thing, and I think I vaguely understand it. It comes out of principally the bankers and the real estate agents, but can you give me any details on what techniques are being used now, you say, to move black people to the east side of town?
So the techniques that are being used now to desperately impact people of color is that with the new people that have been recruited with city dollars to move here, and this is an international movement as well. We are seeing people come in from all over the world moving here. And so this is just not people from the United States of America, but this is Australia, all from Europe are moving here because they see this as a good place, a place that's affordable. You know, Portland, Oregon is beautiful. And so it's a draw for people. And when they get here and see the culture, they feel the love of the people, they want to stay. And so what they've done is you got a lot of retirees coming. You have a lot of young people coming here from the East Coast. And they're bringing money, which is an infusion of capital that is matched with city dollars, which is federal and state. But they're leveraging that. And basically, it's causing rents to rise up because they're paying more for the properties than they're actually really, really worth. But because they're able to, because where they're coming from, they were actually paying that much, then they have extra cash because they've sold properties. And so then they're getting here having these bid wars, and people are paying anywhere from 50 to 200,000 more for homes, and you have at least 30 people lined up to purchase.
So into this wound that we just described then comes a straight up assault of gentrification.
Yes.
Just a pure economic force now.
Right.
Okay, I think I understand what you're saying there.
And if I can say, this America within itself has a wound to heal. I actually had a vision, and the vision was that on the body, the right leg to the left of the knee, there is a 4-inch wound, the wound of America, that is 3 inches deep. It has a scab that is an inch thick, and in the center of that wound, it is dead. But throughout the sore, it's biled up and pussed up, and it stinks really bad. And Donald Trump is the lancer of that, because now is the time for us to face and address head on this wound of America, which has been the colonization of Native people and people of color, and the land grab, as well as the servitude of African Americans into slavery. And so where the scab is grown so thick, it is because we've tried to open it up and clean it, but we've never truly done it. And so now what we're having happen is that it has to be now. And what black people and people of color have felt all along, white people, dominant culture, is actually getting to really see it full blown and experience it, because I think there was a disconnect on the treatment and how people were being treated, and just how this system has caused so much injury and harm and pain. And so as a group of people, as a nation, we have to come together to address the wound. We have to clean it out. Even if we have to write a list, let us write the list of everything and go down that list and begin to apply the love and the salve to cleanse it, so that the wound can be closed up and sutured. And then we do have to apply the TLC and love it back into place. And then the body can begin to walk as one.
Very poetic. Thank you for that.
Yes.
Well, that was fantastic. That was more information than I was hoping to get, and certainly beautifully focused. Do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. Thank Laura, and thank her, the team and all the participants. I'm just glad that we're actually seeing the artistic community and communities of color being able to participate and tell our story as it should be told, and that the larger community actually is patronizing and participating as well and supporting, because that's what we need, is for dominant culture. In order for these events to be successful, they have to come and participate and patronize. They can't stay away, but they have to patronize and give it the value that they give everything else. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Teresa Mitchell for KBOO Portland.